Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to another special edition of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and always wonderful to be able to broadcast to you live in living color. And we have been doing a few special broadcasts for the past couple of weeks, actually starting doing August, doing Black August. We started premiering and bringing forward additional programs other than our regular one that we do on Saturday night. We're going to continue to do our programs every Saturday night from 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time until 12 midnight. But we want to also make sure that we're able to bring you other information as it comes up because it's so necessary to keep our people as well informed and advised as possible. And so we try to do that whenever we possibly can. This past week or so, of course, we've been reporting about an incident that occurred here in Philadelphia. And for those of you who are not familiar with the city of Philadelphia, then we're going to help you to get a little more familiar with it. Number one, it's a cutthroat city. It's a very cutthroat, a very cliquish, and a very conniving kind of city. Now, some of you that don't live in Philly are probably saying the same thing about your city, too. And you're probably right. But I can tell you that there's a real special kind of brand and flavor in Philly. To give you a perfect example, roughly 30 years or so ago, the FBI, of all people, did a special investigation on police corruption in Philadelphia. So, you know, anytime the FBI, anytime the other corrupted so-called law enforcement agency is going to do an investigation on some of their own people, some of the, you know, another law enforcement group, and you know they must be off the hook. They must be doing stuff that is so outrageous and so blatant that, you know, it's just no way to dismiss it or to get around it. And certainly that was the case with the Philadelphia Police Department, Frank Rizzo, and you know, and so many others. I mean, the police just had these codes, and many are familiar with the codes. They are codes that protect one another. And Philadelphia has always shown, as many cities, have always shown a very special kind of ability to do that, you know. So with that said, this past week or so, we had another case of what we call police terrorism, police and governmental terrorism. We've gotten beyond calling this stuff police brutality. We've gotten beyond calling it even police misconduct. Whenever you are beaten so badly that you have, you know, staples in your head, all across your head, you don't want beyond being brutalized, okay? And then when you're taunted at the same time, when you are, you know, treated in a way that is, you know, just despicable, you know, this brother was sitting on the ground, sitting, not, you know, standing up, not trying to fight or anything, sitting on the ground. Now, for those of you who receive our e-blurbs, then you've also gotten the video. Actually, during the past couple of days, we've been able to send out a couple of videos. There have been some updated ones. But clearly, what you will see is at some point he was even handcuffed. Maybe just one handcuff, and then at some point maybe both. I don't remember right offhand. But the bottom line is for at least four police officers to, you know, just all on them. That's all I can really say. I happened to go over to the area today where the situation happened, because what we do here at New Day Resurrection, what the Black Women's Defense League does, what the Men and Women Movement does, before we get involved with a story or a case or a situation, you have to do investigation. For those of you who remember the situation with the Scott sisters, we did the same thing with the Scott sisters. We studied the case. We examined the case, the records, and talked with people who were involved with the case. You have to do that. You can't just, you know, say, well, this is what it is and whatever. I mean, we already know that it is, but when you're dealing with certain issues, you have to be able to back it up and you know, let people know that you're really serious about what you're doing. You're not just trying to jump on a bandwagon or whatever. So in the case of the Scott Sisters, when we literally went to Mississippi to investigate the case, the area, how the people were responding to certain things and so forth, we did that. Unfortunately, we ran into some unexpected problems, although to some degree expected, because after doing the Million Women March, that created such an eye-opener. It really prepared me in particular for key things that could happen when you're organizing. And so, unfortunately, what we ended up realizing was that as we proceed with the case of the Scott Sisters, the Million Women March and the Black Women's Defense League would have to do that in our own way and not necessarily connected to some of the various existing groups. Most of the groups, if not all of them, had already been involved during the course of the past 16 years. And some, you know, had been involved sporadically or, you know, at different intervals. Some might have been involved ongoingly. But the bottom line is the ball got dropped. And then all of a sudden, you know, a lot of energy began to be circulated. And it began to get a little crazy, to be honest. So what we found we had to do was to kind of, you know, really back up, go for our own strategy and how we thought we need to deal with this and proceed in that manner. So for those of you who have been keeping up with the Scott Sisters case, we have not done a lot of reporting on that. We know that other people have been. When we're ready to do that, it will be thorough. We do not want to just, you know, create a lot of hype or just, you know, go for the moment. Our movement is about consistency and definitely about commitment. And so, unfortunately, we kind of ran into some problems that depict, you know, some of that going on. And, you know, again, what the Million Women March helped us to realize and learn is that we couldn't even trust people that we knew, as it turned out. People that we had worked with in the past, we ended up finding out that they sold us out. And we, therefore, could not possibly begin to engage in any dialogue or whatever with them. So now, you know, we know that if that is the case, certainly we cannot get into that with people that we don't know. So it is important that as we as a people proceed in investigating or dealing with various cases, we got to be thorough. We got to know what we're doing. This brother Askia Sabor was brutalized, beaten, terrorized. And very soon we're going to go to our live line and we're going to talk with his father. I had the opportunity to speak with his father earlier today. I spoke with his sister, Brother Eskia's sister, a few days ago. If you did get the video that we were sending out, you saw his sister and you saw his father also. You also saw the community at large that who is very, very supportive. I mean, this is a situation where it's just cut and dry. There's no questions. It is no doubt, nothing. Now, in my going over to the area today, I had a chance to kind of, examine the area as I do, again, when I get involved in any kind of a case, especially a case that deals with the government. And going in the area, the blood is still on the ground, both top puddles where it was is still on the ground. I also found another one with less amounts of blood, but it's still there. I also got the chance to look at the various businesses that were in the area or that are in the area on each side of the corner. I also got a chance to see the camera that is inside of the Chinese restaurant where this situation happened directly in front of. But what I also saw, which is what I was looking for, and it took me about 15 minutes to find it actually, but I found on the street a camera. A Philadelphia police camera. Okay? So now, if the Chinese folk who's saying that they erased it or it got erased or whatever, anyway, it hasn't been made available, that camera that is approximately right at the corner of 55th Street, and I checked to see, you know, because you can kind of tell if it works because it blinks. And it was blinking. Okay, so family, there is a camera, and it clearly reads on the side of it, police. So we now have another piece of evidence and information that needs to be looked at and so forth. Now, again, Philadelphia is known for its corruption, not just the politicians, because y'all know the politicians in Philly, they're just off the chain totally, you know, and then we'll go into that in another show, but certainly the police department. So now, this is what's going to happen tomorrow. There's a major rally that's going to happen. Folks are going to be walking over, marching over, whatever you want to call it, to the police district that these particular officers came from. And there's going to be a demand for their names, their badges, et cetera, et cetera. And this is the preparation to get ready for other types of community actions and efforts. So it's really important that the community be informed, gets involved, and are ready. Now, I spoke with another attorney, actually, a couple of months ago, because we were preparing even a few months ago to hold hearings in Philly community, what we call village hearings, where we can begin to document the various cases, what happened, how it happened, how did it proceed, you know, did it go to trial or whatever. As a matter of fact, this Saturday, we're going to have Brother Shabaka on our regular program, who also was accosted in a situation or involved in a situation with police or law enforcement people. This was right in city council. So he's going to report on that on Saturday. But for right now, again, we're going to go to our live line in a few moments, and we're going to talk about the case that just happened here or a situation that just happened here in Philadelphia. Brother Skiz, a well-known brother in our community, very beautiful spirited brother. Has been in our community. His father is well-known in the community. His family is well-known in the community. So we're not just talking about people who are known for making trouble or doing, you know, some mischievous kinds of things. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about a people who are loving people, who are respectful people, a people that have some teachings of dignity and exemplify that. So, you know, it was just no reason whatsoever you know, for these people, these police officers, to do what they did, except for the mere fact that this is what they do, period. And until the people began to stand up to really address these issues, this is what they're still going to do. Remember, this is a city that a bomb was dropped. Okay, so if you don't think they're not serious about what they do, then you need to just revisit an entire block being blown up and 11 people murdered, including children, and a 65 homes destroyed totally, and they still have not been able to regroup. So with that said, we're going to go now to our live line, and we're going to talk about what happened to Brother Askir Sabor. I was looking to see the exact date. I don't have, but I can tell you that almost minutes after it happened, I received a phone call to tell me what was going on because of, you know, an association that I have with someone that was right there and an eyewitness to it. But right now, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to talk with our brother. I'm not sure if we have Sister Naima or if we have Brother Askia's father on the line, but we have one of the family members on our live line right now. Brother,
Hello?
Are you there?
Yes.
All right, wonderful.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
This is Askia Sabor's father, Abdul Sabor.
All right, good thing.
I'm honored and happy to be on the phone with you. Mm-hmm. I want to first start off by saying power to the people.
Yes.
We want to say a lot, but it's not really required because things have been going on for so long. You know, the police terrorism that we find in our cities, in other neighborhoods across the country, and it seems like it's something truly, truly wrong with these people who are hired to be civil servants. Mm-hmm. If you're going to serve, It has always been my practice to be kind to people, to mm-hmm. give them the best that I have to offer. I've been an outstanding person in the community for quite a few years, and I don't recall ever doing anything to anyone. And I know my son is the same kind of person because that's the way I raised him.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people walk up and down the street just moments ago, and they're acting as though they don't know that a fight is going on.
Mm-hmm.
But they're soon to know that a fight is going on. And it doesn't matter whether you're a male or a female, an adult right. or a child.
Mm-hmm.
You stand the chance of being harassed by the police department or by a police officer who has turned into a rogue cop who will shoot you down without any thought about it at all. So, what is it about my son?
Well, Brother, before you go into that, just kind of take a few moments, please, because we have people listening that
yes.
may not be familiar with what happened. Okay, so can we just kind of give them a little bit of insight into what took place?
Okay. Askia had just left his house September the 3rd,
mm-hmm.
Around about 8:30, somewhere in that area,
mm-hmm.
and he was riding a bike. He saw his cousin. He stopped and had some words with his cousin. After he had some words with his cousin, the police officer pulled up and told them to get off the corner. It's a Chinese restaurant on the corner that many of the people frequent. The next thing, they said to the police officer that it's hot inside. He said, his response was, it's even hotter at 55th and Pine. And so they were separating and getting ready to go about their separate ways. And the police officer said, by the way, let me see some identification.
Mm-hmm.
So my son's cousin pulled out his identification and gave it to the police officer. In turn, Askia was trying to get his identification, and the police officer asked him, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Askia said, you said you wanted to see some identification.
Mm-hmm.
Then the officer said, I'm going to lock you up. And he put a handcuff on his left wrist. And when he put the handcuff on his left wrist, the other officer took his hand and grabbed Askia in the throat and was pulling down on my son's throat like he was trying to rip out his esophagus.
Wow.
And from there, the beating started.
Mm-hmm.
This short, stocky, bald-headed or no-hair officer started beating my son with a telescopic baton. He was aiming at his head,
mm-hmm.
purposely hitting him upside the head. I can't begin to count how many times he striked me. He kept, all I can see is this man hitting my son in the head. I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Why, if I was there, he probably would have killed me
mm-hmm.
because I wouldn't have been able to take what I saw him doing to my son.
Right.
Then the people are taking pictures and whatnot. Then he pulls out a gun, a weapon, and he vanishes all over the crowd like he was getting ready to shoot somebody. Well, you don't pull a gun out unless you're getting ready to shoot. He could have misfired. Anything could have happened. But he didn't care about the civilians in the street. He was only concerned about tormenting, torturing, and brutalizing my son like he was a Gestapo agent. I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
My son, if you know him, he's a guy that tries to help people out all the time. He's a loyal person.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the kind of guy that go around looking to separate. He looks for unity. His art. He has people that are involved in his art. A unified effort to show some expression of freedom. But what kind of freedom can one have when he can't even stand on a corner in the neighborhood that he grew up in and talk with a relative? I understand that the law does not subscribe to murdering people without a trial. There was a trial and an execution that took place at the 19th District in regards to my son. He had no right to whip my son like that.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, does he have a son? I wonder, does he have a daughter? I mean, how would he feel if somebody whipped his children? I mean, I just don't get it. It was incensed. I don't know whether he was working overtime or whatever. And I'm not trying to make it easy for anybody. But daggone it, I just can't understand why. If we could just add on to tomorrow,
mm-hmm,
at 6 o'clock, we're going to move out. But 5 o'clock, we'll be together. We'll come together at 55th and Lansdowne. And we want to invite everyone out for this here walk. It's going to be a peaceful walk for justice, freedom, and righteousness for all the people. You know, it doesn't matter. Nobody asked Askia, was he a Christian, or asking, was he a Muslim, or asking, was he a Jewish, a Hebrew, Israelite, none of that. All they wanted to do was kill my son without shooting him. And then probably say, oh, he got all banged up in the cell or some crazy stuff like that. So I'm
hurt. The video is clear. The video is obvious. I mean, you know, there's several videos out now. But now, brother, this is what also, what had they said, if anything, and they had to, you know, write a report or say something, because Askia was charged with something. What was he finally charged with?
Well, it was two situations. The first time they charged him with assault and disorderly conduct. And
wow.
A few hours later, they charged him with reckless endangerment of taking the gun from a police officer, fighting a cop, and all of this contrived. It's contrived. I mean, it's just crazy. You know, I mean, it just don't make no sense. I know that a young fella that I wasn't even with, he got arrested by the police officers, and he didn't bite nobody or nothing. He got his teeth knocked out with a billy club. I mean, they were vicious and brutal when I was coming up as a young man. So I know what they'll do to you. I fear for any young man's life out there in the streets of Philadelphia under these sick, crazy officers that need some type of mental evaluation before they're allowed to go out in the streets and deal with the public. That's just my recommendation.
And, you know, that's been one of the dialogues or discussions about requirements for police officers. There's a brother over in Newark, Brother DeLacy, who's a former cop, and what he just said emphatically is that there needs to be a mandatory requirement for all police and law enforcement people that they have psychiatric evaluations.
Yes. Yes. I fully agree. I mean, anytime you have things like guns and weapons
sure.
of destruction, I mean,
that's right.
destroy the very fabric of our country. This kind of foolishness going on and get away with it. And I mean, your parents used to tell you, don't lie. I tell you, don't lie. You know, but you have people that lie because they want to secure their job. And I understand what the fear is, as hard as times are. But why tell lies? Why cover up somebody else's crap that is really making your job even more difficult? So they have a cronyism going on in the police department.
That's right.
It's not good.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I pray that the federal government will get involved and look into this here situation and find out what's going on, because something needs to be done. And we're not talking about yesterday. We're talking about right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right now. Tomorrow.
So now, from what I remember, because I did get a chance to talk with your attorney a few days ago, and he's going to be coming on our show soon as well. And from what I remember correctly, Askia has a preliminary hearing or something coming up on Monday.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mhm. That would be at 55th and Pine at 8:00.
Okay.
And I just want to tell the people that I greatly appreciate their support. They've been so loving and so kind and supportive of my son.
That's right. Now, 56th and Pine, is that also the 19th district?
No, that's 18th. That's a holding facility. That's a holding facility.
Okay. So now tell us again, the rally for tomorrow, the walk for tomorrow, what district is that? That's the 19th district.
We're going to the 19th district from 55th and Lansdowne up to 61st and Thompson.
Right. Okay. Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, how many officers, if you know, I mean, I know I saw at least four that were at least, because, you know, in this day and age, the reality is if you are in it or around it, you are part of it. So if that can apply to us, it certainly can apply to them. So there were certainly at least four police officers that were surrounding a scare. There was one in particular that had the weapon in his hand, both a gun and the baton, but then there were other police officers that were, you know, circling kind of around him. So how many people are we kind of talking about? Because they all need to be brought up on charges.
Exactly. What we got was a call out for the whole 19th District gang to come to that particular area. And then they took turns. That's why it looked like it was just four. but they were taking turns coming in and getting their punch, doing what they had to do to try to dismember my son. It was quite a long time that they was up there just brutalizing my son. You know, and I thank God that he has his life. But the point of the matter is he got 6 staples in his head. His hit in the head, we don't know his real condition at this particular point. And it was so many cops. I mean, you know, when you see 3 or 4 of them, it looks like 100. You know what I'm saying? And they're just taking turns, and they're just beating him. And you can hear people in the background saying, why are y'all doing this?
Right.
That should be enough. Why don't you stop? You know, and I mean, you know, it just goes to show you, people sure aren't like they used to be.
No doubt. And for me, that's why some of this has gotten to the point that it is because there used to be a time when there used to be more response from our people. I mean, fortunately, in this case, you know, we're seeing some response, but I've seen situations in the past 10, 15 years where people be looking and then they keep on walking, you know.
Yeah.
It has gotten to that, and now we don't have the organizations in our community. There used to be organizations in our community that were there every day, all the time. Now, if something happened and a little group come together and then after stuff is over, that group is gone, or you have a group that's there and they're getting funded by the corporations or your little grants and stuff, so for real, they can't do so much. So, you know, this system has really diluted the ability to address situations effectively because folks be afraid to losing their funding or, you know, they have political aspirations or whatever. So, you know, it's unfortunate that this has happened, but I think the other side of it is that I believe some people will now see the real importance of there being, and I saw this on the video, on one of the videos, I saw a sister say it, that there, you know, and a brother too, we got to come together and create something that's going to be in place, intact, and ready.
Yes.
Because if we think this is going to stop anytime soon, in fact, we know it's going to get worse, really.
Yes.
And if we're not ready, then we're just going to continue to be victims.
Well, I tell you, you're so right, because we set the tone for how people are going to treat us. Other people who understand that, what they do, they organize, they supervise, they deputize, and they also strategize on what needs to be done. And that's the same type of spirit that we should have, or any people should have, in regards to keeping some civil obedience, some civil order, some civil control in their own environment. We wouldn't have any reason for the police officers to come into our neighborhoods if we were doing what we were supposed to be doing. So I implore everyone to put their thinking caps on and be very, very diligent and very careful. And when you see a young person being assaulted by the police officers, don't walk away, but get involved.
And not just a young person, but any of our people.
Anyone.
You know, any of our people, because the reality is, you know, it can be any of our people at any time anyway. So if one person walks past, they need to remember that could be the next time your mother or brother or sister or father or child. You know, it's really got to be where our community as a people begin to recognize that we've got to deal with the reality of protecting and defending ourselves. And there are civil rights to do that. There are civil rights and human rights to do that.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So, brother, again, tell people about where we're going to meet up tomorrow and tell them, you know, exactly the route and so forth.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. We're going to meet at 55th and Lansdowne, and we're going to come together at 5 o'clock, and we're going to start moving out around 6 o'clock. And we're going to go, I believe it's up Lansdowne Avenue to 61st, and then over 61st to Thompson. And that's the simplest way to go. We at one point wanted to go in and out, in and out, in and out, but that could possibly mean that some people would get a little confused and lost. But we just want to keep it simple. Keep it simple. Even though it wasn't a simple assault, it was attempted murder. We want
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right, brother. I'm so glad you said. You know, I'm just glad you said that, because people need to really understand and realize that when you're hitting someone with a weapon, you know, of that nature, and you're doing it directly in their head. See, I saw someone in the video say that if they were really trying to subdue him or whatever, they could have used mace. I mean, of course, we wouldn't have wanted that. But mace would have certainly been, I think, a little better than all them blows to the head.
Right. It just wasn't necessary. It was unsense to do that. I mean, you had the handcuff, one handcuff on him.
Right.
And they would put the handcuff on him. It didn't appear to me or anyone else that he was trying to not be cuffed. I mean, he was asking the question, what did I do? I mean, his hands is wide open. His fists are not balled up. He didn't have a gun. He didn't have a knife. So what's the problem? You know, coming together is not the problem. It's the solution. And that's what
That's right. That's right. All right, family. Well, you heard it right here. We are talking to Brother Eskia's father. And this is just the beginning of this dialogue. Of course, it is going to continue, but we want to make sure that you at least had the information to get ready for tomorrow. Of course, we indicated that Eskia will be going to a preliminary hearing on Monday. And, you know, certainly this issue is far from being resolved, from being resolved, okay?
Yes.
We also mentioned that as Brother just said earlier at the beginning of the dialogue, Eskia is an upstanding young brother. He is, what is the age of Eskia, my brother?
29
years old. He's a father.
Father, three children.
That's right. And so, you know, we're not, again, talking about, you know, just some street person or whatever. This is a very, very well-known, well-mannered brother, you know, very intelligent brother, and is definitely one that makes contributions to our people. In one of the videos that we reviewed, the brother even talked about how Eskia does things in the community to help, you know, young folks in particular, but anyone, period. But, you know, he put forth an effort to help young folks. So, you know, to have this to happen to him, I mean, we would be remiss, to say the least, if we did not respond appropriately in making certain that he had the kind of support that he needs. Okay, so my brother, I want to thank you again for, you know, for calling and sharing this information with us. And, you know, we're going to bring you back probably next week and do another update.
Yes, ma'am, if God's willing. I thank you so much for allowing me to come on your program and talk with you and share my sentiments and my feelings about this. I guess need to say once again, we need to come together, not for so much for Eskia, but we need to come together for ourselves.
No doubt. And I will certainly be there tomorrow. So, and we're going to do a live feed from when we get to the police station tomorrow.
Very good.
All right, my brother. Our lines is open for you. If something comes up and you need to get some information out, feel free to call us and we'll get it on.
Yes, ma'am. I would like to say something good. I'll talk with
Absolutely.
You later.
Absolutely. All right, my brother. Peace to you. All right, family. We were just talking with Brother Abdul Sabor,
And, of course, that was and is the father of Brother Askia. And, of course, we talked about how Brother Askia, you know, was brutally beaten. What we call, what Chairman Freed has put out there for us, you know, in talking about police and government of terrorism, we know that it exists. We've seen it exist over the years. We've seen COINTELPRO. We've seen so much that these people have done. And even now, we're starting to learn even more just recently how the photographer for Dr. King was what? FBI. I mean, not as surprising, but we know what these people do and continue to do. So with that said, what we're going to do now is we're going to talk about continuing the legacies of freedom, of liberation, of justice. With that said, you know, we have for the past couple of weeks been trying to get our brother on, and, you know, we are blessed and honored to have him join us tonight. For those who get our e-blurbs, then you know. We've had Chairman Freer on really for the past couple of weeks, you know, giving us a lot of powerful updates, information, insight, and definitely inspiration. But along with him is a brother who they've now kind of connected or building and also are doing some of the work, the continuation of some work, as well as in their own rights doing work that is necessary for our people. So what we want to do now, family, is because this is a special episode, we want to now bring to you a brother that we've been really very honored and very happy to talk with earlier and to begin to build with. You know, we talk about being a family when we deal with being a people. Well, we are that, and we are going to show you even that more so as we proceed. We're going to go to our live line now, and joining us is Brother Malcolm Latif Shabazz. Greetings, brother. Are you there?
Yeah, peace. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Loud and clear.
How are you going?
Peace to you. Peace to you. Well, welcome to New Day Resurrection and Liberation, and definitely, you know, welcome to our extended family.
Thank you. I appreciate you extending the platform.
Oh, indeed. I mean, we have to do that because, you know, that's what we talk about here at New Day, and that's what we do, you know, in terms of our work is continue the legacy of the Million Woman March, of course, but that includes, you know, the legacy of those who have come before us. The Million Woman March was partially developed based on some of the teachings and the legacy and the work of some of our great ones. So, you know, we would be remiss if we did not do everything possible on our end to make certain that we were participating and helping to bring forward the kind of legacies that we have embraced and have loved over the years. But now you are on a mission.
Yes.
I know that's right. I know that's right. Well, you know, and you know, and it's a wonderful thing that it is. So before we go into some of the things that that you're working on, you and Chairman Fred with this legacy tour, because that's what we really want people to kind of get a better understanding of, so that as we proceed towards Black History Month and, you know, those that celebrate Kwanzaa. And remember, Kwanzaa not only represents, you know, some kind of little gathering, but it represents principles, you know, Umoja, Kujichagulia, you know, principles that represent how we should live. So as we proceed into those seasons, and then, of course, again, Black History Month, we want our people to know that, you know, they really need to be bringing you know, you and Chairman Fred for this legacy tour that you're going to tell them more about very shortly. But in the meantime, for those who may not know, you know, who you are or what legacy we're talking about or whatever, maybe they might have lived on the rocks for a moment or something and didn't get it, or they didn't get our e-blurb, okay? But, you know, if you would please just allow our listeners, our family, to become a little more familiar with you.
My name is Malcolm Shabazz, and I am the grandson, the namesake, and the first male heir of El-Haj Malik El-Shabazz, better known to the masses as Brother Malcolm X. I'm about 25 years old, and you know, I come from a family of all women, you know, strong women. You know, my grandfather had six daughters, and my mother was his second oldest. Her name is Kabila Shabazz.
right. That's right. And for those who either attended the Million Woman March or heard about it or saw it or whatever, both Brother Malcolm's mother and aunt spoke at the Million Woman March, as they most appropriately should have, and did quite well. So it's, again, it's a pleasure, Brother Ted, to have you, you know, with us. And, you know, we are just so, you know, pleased about knowing what it is that you are now preparing to do. Well, when I talk with Chairman Fred, I mean, it just warmed my heart, because that's like my little brother, you know. So when he was talking about you, he was saying it in that same way, you know, this is my little brother, you know. So it was just, it was a beautiful feeling and a beautiful dialogue that he was able to share with me, that, you know, that you and he have bonded in such a way that it's just so powerful. It's so powerful. And I'm just so blessed to know that, you know, you now kind of connected like that.
Right. You know, quite nationally, we share a bond, being that I was assassinated in 1965 at the age of 39, and his father was assassinated in 1969, a few years later, at the age of 21. You know, so quite naturally, we share this bond, and, you know, and the way that they were assassinated. You know, there are people out there who want to destroy the legacy of my grandfather, Malcolm X. They want to destroy the legacy of the Black Panther Party, of Chairman Fred Hampton. So, you know, Huey P. Newton, who was the Minister of Defense for the Black Panther Party and the founder, stated that no movement can be successful without the support of the people. But in order to have the support of the people, they have to be educated and made aware of the cause. I mean, even Harriet Tubman said that she could have freed a lot more slaves if only they knew that they were slaves. So even during times of a physical slavery, during people being whipped, you know, you still had those out there. They refused. They didn't know that they were slaves because they were brainwashed, indoctrinated, and the same thing is going on today. So this is why I'm so, you know, to be out here putting in this work with the Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., you know, because they're trying to raise and heighten the awareness of the people to the plight of the people, to the causes, you know, that we face.
And, Brother, you know, it's so important, especially right now, because unfortunately, all over the country, we're dealing with such whitewash in so many areas. There used to be, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, there was still some clarity about Black folks, you know, no matter how we connected ourselves with others. And we, of course, should have allies in whatever we do, you know, most definitely. But nowadays, it's so confusing. The clarity about being an African or being someone of you know, Black, it seems like people are often afraid to say that or don't want to say that or cringe when you say it. You know, they've got to connect themselves to something else that is, you know, multicultural or whatever. And again, don't get me wrong, you know, that of course has its time and place, and, you know, we try to be harmonious with anyone. But at the same time, we are the only people in this country that has endured or had to be subjected to what went down. You see, we're the only ones that can talk about it, represent it, and really effectively address it. So to have the people, to have the voices that can appropriately do that in this day and age is so, so important, because a lot of our people have been killed. A lot of our people that were doing it have been incarcerated or set up or something else, you know. So we were left kind of with a void. So now it's like, wow, finally we're starting to see some people emerge and step forward. You know, my dear brother Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, of course, was one who was extremely vocal and clear in his position. And needless to say, you know, he was not able to continue the work that he wanted to do. And while some, you know, brushed it off and said, oh, well, you know, it was because of a health issue, and just accepted that. Just accepted it. Not even looking at history, not even looking at, you know, other dynamics. He immediately accepted that that's what that was, you see. So, you know, so as we proceed, we have to be very clear about how these people operate and what they will do. And that's why, again, it's so important that, as you said, Brother, that our people embrace those who are going to stand and represent. It is the people's support that can help keep us safe, help keep us strong, and help keep us focused. So, you know, again, I welcome you, you know. I welcome you, and I'm very proud to hear of what you now, you know, have decided or feel compelled or spiritually moved to now do. So with that said, what are some of the things that you and Kim and Fred are focusing on?
I just wanted to briefly comment on what you said about as black people, African people here in the United States. You know, a lot of people try to portray it as if when my grandfather came back from Mecca, he completely changed his views and said all white people are good. This is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he came back from Mecca, what he said was from what he experienced, you know, he would never again place a blanket indictment over an entire people. He took back his previous views of the white man being a double race and so forth. And he said that he regretted that position that he had held previously. But what he said was that the white people, they can help us, but they cannot join us. And the reason why he said this is because he said that there must be black solidarity before there can be black-white solidarity. He said that black people have to learn how to love themselves and be able to interact amongst themselves and work with themselves before they can go out and try to venture off and deal with other people. We have to have love for self and be able to work with ourselves and do for ourselves before we go out and try to interact with everybody else.
That's what I'm talking about. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, okay, well, that was right on point. So, yeah, I mean, I'm in total agreement, without a doubt, and I'm glad that you shared that clarity, because over the years there has been, you know, so much dialogue and debate about, you know, what El-Hajj Jabbas meant, what he said, what he didn't say, and, you know, it's just, and I mean, it's all good because history tends to kind of mandate that kind of interaction and you know, being, you know, with the Million Woman March, being involved in something that is historic, you know, even in this short period of time for me, it has been such a lesson. I mean, things that I never even dreamt I've been able to bear witness to. Some, you know, not so good, but a lot really good, but nevertheless, a lot of lessons. So, you know, it's really good to know and to be able to have the dialogue that we're having that will, in fact, provide some clarity because, you know, I think you have some insight.
God willing.
You know, and that's what I tell folks, too. I say, look, I don't care what somebody tell you about MWM. I can guarantee you they can't tell you what I can tell you, you know, so we need to be real about it. But so now getting back to what you and Chairman Fred are working on, of course, you each have specific things that you're going to be focusing on dealing with the legacies of your grandfather and his father, but you know, also in connecting the dots and bringing that into the present day. What are some of the things that you collectively are working on? And we'll go back to some of the things that you know, may be doing as Malcolm Shabazz. But what are some of the things that you and Chairman Fred are specifically working on?
A couple weeks ago, we were together in Chicago, and we were also in Gary, Indiana, and we also went through Detroit. When we were in Chicago, we celebrated Chairman Fred Hampton Jr.'s father, Chairman Fred. We celebrated his birthday. He would have, you know, he was assassinated in 1969 when he was 21 mm-hmm. years old. You know, so we celebrated his birthday out there, and you know, we just we had a celebration, and also Imam Chief Malik, also known as Jeff Fort, you know, who started the Black Peace Stones, his grandson was out there with us. So we were just out there, you know, speaking with the people. We out there for the people. We're trying to heighten the awareness, you know, of the people. We cover various, all different topics from you know, the most two controversial would be that of politics and religion. But, you know, a lot of politics, education, street tribes, what's going on with the street tribes out here, the media, the disinformation of the media and the tactics that they use, the divide and conquer tactics of the oppressor and how they keep us divided amongst ourselves. I mean, basically just like so many topics, so many issues, everything that you could possibly imagine that the people today we cover.
Okay. Now, one of the things that
and it's also from experience. It's also from experience. You know, it's not, we didn't go read a bunch of books and then step out here and try to speak to the people or be a mouthpiece for the people. You know, we've actually been through the struggle, both of us, ourselves. So that's one of the things that distinguished my grandfather from a lot of other leaders, that he was actually there. He wasn't an intellectual. He was a people's intellectual. He was for the people. You know, a drug dealer can look at my grandfather and say, he's been here and look where he's at. You know, a convict, an ex-convict can look at my grandfather and say, he's been in here and look at what he's accomplished. You know what I'm saying? So he was a perfect example and epitome of what it is to be a true revolutionary. And
he's
for the people. And me and Fred, we out here, Chairman Fred, we're out here and we're in service to the people.
That's right. I love it. I love it. Oh, brother, you just don't even know. It is just so revitalizing and refreshing to hear this, you know, because we just need to just hear these words, hear these things, because it's just not happening the way that it should. With that said, it looks like Chairman Fred is on the other line here, so if you don't mind, I think we're going to bring him on in, and we're going to really rip this dialogue up. Brother Malcolm, that's right. Hold on. I think we got Chairman Fred on the other line here. Chairman Fred, are you there?
Right on. Imp is up. I'm here. I don't know. Comrade. It's always an honor to tag team with my brother Comrade. We've been hitting the ground real hard out here, you know, and it's the revolutionary respect, clench fist, my brother Comrade. I know he's been addressing the business. I don't have much of the interview I've missed, but just not to be redundant, I'm sure he talked about the Chairman Fred Streets Party that he just came from up here, in which he, along with some of our central committee members of the POCC, include our Minister of Information, was in Chicago, and we had a phenomenal event. We on cloud 1,000 right now from this legacy tour that we've been putting out. And, you know, the mantra, one of the mantras of the POCC is we are the great grandchildren of Garvey, the offspring of Malcolm, and ideological cubs of the Black Panther Party. And my closing words to young Malcolm before he left Chicago was, man, he does our ideological grandfather proud, and his biological as well as ideological, you know, grandfather proud. And it's, you know, again, I'm on cloud 1,000, and this, and I'm not taking for granted, you know what I'm saying, this opportunity that, you know what I'm saying, that we've been able to, you know, make these moves, we're going to make some future moves. And I know Chairman Fred, as well as that of El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Malcolm X, you know, looking for the revolutionary hunting ground, said, man, look at here, it's on.
I know that's right. Well, Timmy, what we were talking, Brother Malcolm and I were talking about, and I'm going to raise this question so that we can really start getting to some other specifics, because we've got brothers and sisters out here in our communities that are really in need of direction, you know, for lack of a better word. And so what I need to kind of tap into or get some insight into, if on your legacy tour or in the near future, do you, Brother Malcolm, and you, Chairman Fred, foresee developing something that will allow brothers and sisters to come together and deal with the platform that is relevant to today, but of course is the continuation of the legacies?
No doubt. We, with us, POCC, we also say that our streets are is the office. The streets, that's our office out there in the streets, and our work hours are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And what is unique and what something that we hold dear to our hearts is the fact that, you know, so we have the ability to relate to the And I was talking to some brothers yesterday, brothers and sisters, you know what I'm saying, from the various street tribes in Chicago. And they were just talking about this. They were just, I mean, the impact for them to get the opportunity to meet young Malcolm. And they was, I mean, and these are for me, and I mean, to say it in layman terms, these are not your quote unquote politically, you know, up to par forces. But I mean, but they, because I did quote Stephen Biko. Stephen Biko said that our people must grasp the ability to distinguish intelligence from the ability to articulate. So a lot of people can articulate certain things, but the mass can identify the real. And again, it's just even the symbolism and significance of, you know, the offspring of forces who, as we say, in particular, is that of the case of Malcolm as well as Chairman Fred, that came from the valley. You know, I talk about when I went to the repast with Tookie Williams. I see in our communities, you know what I'm saying, a lot of only options, quote-unquote options we've had in life is to become a Boy Scout or a banger. Again, become a Boy Scout or a banger. In other words, to suit up and boot up for corporate America or to be some sort of aspiring black Lucky Luciano. Even we're going to provide a venue, you know what I'm saying, as the Black Panther Party provided a venue for forces that come from like situations, like circumstances. And we not come from this elitism or this dogmatism that we better than the mass, the better than people, you know. But, you know what I'm saying, people need something they can identify with. These selected, notice I didn't say elected, but these selected, they give us these poverty pimps and these soothsayers and these so-called representatives that we've been just been forced down our throat in one way or another. The masses can identify with these forces. I'm talking about, like, you're speaking a foreign language to these cats, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, and again, you know, man, I don't take it for granted, you know what I'm saying? I mean, young Malcolm, you know, who in one way or another, as well as that of myself and so many other life forces, have kissed the casket, tango with torture, and danced with death, you know what I'm saying? In so many ways, you know. And the masses need these type of situations, type of scenarios that they can identify with, say, man, how can you help us, as the Black Panther Party did, turn our communities into classrooms? You know what I'm saying? Because the stakes are too high just for some Manchurian candidates or some great white hopes or some soothsayers with some nice speeches. They want to say, man, brother, sister, how can you really relate to what I'm going through? How can we move forward?
That's right. That's right. No doubt.
Real mom, when I was in prison, you know what I'm saying? About 2004, not too long before I had got out. The chairman used to write me. He used to send me pictures. He used to keep me abreast to his organizational efforts and the work that they were putting in out there. The Minister of Information, J.R., you know, was very supportive. And, you know, I wrote to Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., and I asked him one time. I said, man, if there's anything that I can do. I was 23 and a half. I was locked down. I said, if there's anything I could do, you know, to help, you know, further the cause, you know, to help the efforts of your organization, the POCC, Prisoners of Conscience Committee, please let me know. Because even though I'm in here, you know, we still do what we do. And basically what he told me, he said, brother, just make it out of prison. Just get out of prison. And then we're gonna go from there. You know, and now I'm out and we've connected, and it's a beautiful thing. You know, the formula for a public assassination is the character assassination before the physical assassination. They have to make you killable before the eyes of the public in order for their murder to be justified. And this is how they attack the legacy. You know, they attacked my grandfather through this means, Martin Luther King, Chairman Fred Hampton, various members and leaders of the struggle that identified with the masses of oppressed. You know, so we're here to show you that the efforts to destroy the legacy of my grandfather and of Chairman Fred Hampton and the Black Panther Party and all the other leaders have been in vain.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it sounds, in fact, I know very clearly that we are definitely on the right path and moving not forward but onward, you know, and it's all good. It's definitely all good. Getting to the legacy tour. Now, Chairman Fred mentioned you're going to get very soon a press or PR package to me and to other folks so that we can start getting that circulated and get you brothers, you know, ready to really, you know, get to where you need to get to, because we need you to be where you need to be.
Yes, indeed. We're going to get that. Let me just say this But first of all, man, I get chills, you know, from just, talking about this tour and just, you know, the, young Malcolm, just when he dialoguing. And, brother he got a memory like a Kenyan elephant, he tells me, the specific letters that the correspondences that we sent to him, and he understands, the deafness and that, it's an attack that, not just on us as individuals, but, these legacies, the people proud. And this legacy tour is going, like, when we talk about this, we're not just talking about some abstract, disconnected type of way about, way back then. We're going to be discussing a number of different things, a number of different issues, connecting, the whole struggles during the Black Power movement in the 60s and that of our predecessors, such as courageous forces, El Haj, Malik al-Shabazz, connecting to the different instances of resistance, whether it be in the streets of Chicago, in response to the police terrorism that we subjected to on a day-to-day basis. Minister of Information will be accompanying us on various parts of the tour also. We'll be updated, which he'll be displaying some footage around the resistance and the rebellions. Those, I didn't say the riots, but the rebellions that occurred in Oakland, California in response to the police execution of Oscar Grant. And, just give an inside view, that went down on that historical stomping ground of Oakland, California in the rebellions. And just even making the concrete connections to our people today on, how forces in the past got out, as well as in present day forces, how we still getting down.
As we talk about legacies, I think it's also very important that we make certain as we continue that we focus on our people today. And what I mean by that is our heroes and heroes of today. Because one of the things that I know we've learned from the past is we don't take care of our people the way we should. We wait until people are no longer with us, and then all of a sudden we want to sing their praises. And so with our people today that we see right in our midst that are committed, that are about it, and so forth, we've got to make certain now, brothers, that we begin to establish something that helps to helps secure them, take care of them, and our elders. We don't have Dr. Clark anymore. We don't have Amos Wilson anymore. And many of our scholars and elders, and some who, people have to, we have to raise money to bury them. And we can't get it, and this has gone on for the past 30 years that we know of. So, as we proceed in making certain that the legacies and the history and so forth is put in the community the way it should be, our story, not this fabricated bullcrap stuff that each can be trying to put out here sometimes. And I'm telling you, because I'm still infuriated when I hear different stories about the Native Women March. And I know all of you two in particular, with the stories you heard about your father and grandfather, it's just horrendous to hear some of the nonsense. So we've got to now make certain that, they can't continue to do that. They can't continue to tell just stuff the way they want to tell it. And again, we got to start really protecting or taking a little better care of each other as we proceed. So I'm putting that out there because, as we have these dialogues, we've also got to begin to develop a mandate. And, Tim and Freya, you and I have talked about this, on numerous occasions before already. So I'm just, again, reiterating it. And as we now embrace Brother Malcolm, we also, make him aware or privy to some of what we're talking about, as a family, as we continue to build and do what we need to do in uplifting and raising our people up.
Right on. Right on. You heard me on a number of different occasions say that, with us, we say, in fact, legacies are more important than our life. And I said, because we feel that we have a certain amount of time to physically be here. legacy still serve as an example or a prototype, you know, how people can deal with like situations. And, you know, as I pointed out earlier, you know, we're going to have on this tour, we're going to have a different, you know, going to be accompanied on different paths, you know what I'm saying, touching on different instances of resistance, whether it be in Oakland, Cincinnati, Chicago, Detroit. And we're going to open the door, and we're going to be very, we're going to be sticklers for structure, like distinguishing that everybody's not a revolutionary, but everyone should be guilty of committing at least a revolutionary act. And, you know, and people need to understand that we're not approaching this from an absolute, you know what I'm saying? We understand that, you know, that we all are not going to become some sort of, you know, flame and freedom fighters. But everyone must play some role with the struggle. We are clear that there is a war on our people. There's a war on our legacy. And, you know, we, I was just telling somebody today in Chicago, there's been a constant discussion about this whole thing about Daley, the mayor of Chicago, is not running again. And you steady hear the ruling class harping about this whole thing about the Daley legacy. You know what I'm saying? And I say, one thing I must acknowledge about this criminal, about this gangster, Daley, I say he does his daddy proud. You know what I'm saying? In fact, he's been in office 21 years. And this criminal has been in office. That's an entire generation, you know. And some people grew up and all they knew in life is Daley. A lot of people, you talk to some people in Chicago, they think that the sun's rising in the morning, dogs are supposed to chase cats, and Daley is the mayor. And but in December, when December he was surpassed his tenure. And I really believe he had this whole thing about, I mean, amongst other things, he's maintaining the legacy. You know what I'm saying? And he's done that well. His daddy, Daley Senior, had a legacy of working Negro preachers, poverty pimps, you know what I'm saying, keeping black folks subjective, you know what I'm saying, in brutal, horrid conditions. And, you know, and again, his son does his daddy proud with helping to maintain that legacy. So the ruling class understands the significance of that. And so we in the oppressed and the colonized communities, we must understand that, you know what I'm saying, and the ruling class will attempt to co-opt, to hijack, or water down legacies, whether it comes to the ruling class itself or through various opportunist forces. People say, well, we don't let this person say that this is what he felt about it. We can have different opinions about, you know, sports teams and what type of music you like. But there are certain things that are facts. You know, I recall on the Oprah Winfrey show when they was trying to say, well, Malcolm X, when he said by any means necessary, he meant by politically, educationally, economically. Nonsense. The man told you point blank what he meant, the ballot or the bullet. And you know what I'm saying? And so we must be very clear and concise on these legacies. In fact, we also say that when it comes to these legacies, we are willing and able to cross those T's and dot those I's, literally and figuratively, by making sure these legacies stay in context, you know. And so, again, I'm just so honored, you know, honored as well as humble. I don't, you know, to have the opportunity, you know what I'm saying? I mean, young Malcolm, you know, tag teaming with us, you know, with this, and people say, well, how far y'all going to take this? We say the sky's the limit, and, we got a lot of work to do, and I, again, I don't take this for granted, and this is, we say, phenomenal opportunity to hire this young brother on board with us, and we say, well, opportunity knocks. Snatch the door off the hinges.
I know that's right. Well, I know you know we definitely want you come into Philly. So you need to, as soon as your schedule begins to get formulated, please let us know. You know, with the East Coast when that's going to be projected so that we can get prepared, because you definitely got to come this way.
We'll be looking forward to touching down to Philly. I was just in our last central committee meeting, I was just made abreast about we're going to be working on this campaign in Philadelphia about that latest case of police terrorism.
We just had his father on a little before Brother Malcolm came on. We had Brother Eskia's father on, and we'll be going to the demonstration tomorrow. We're going to do a live feed from there tomorrow, and then we'll do a follow-up probably on Saturday. So I'll tell you a lot about what's going on with that from the community standpoint, because we're getting ready to hold hearings. Getting ready to hold some hearings here.
Okay. See? But POCC, we look forward to getting there, getting an update, and seeing how we can move forward in the spirit of being servant to the people, how we can assist in the mission of exposing and dealing with these contradictions.
Oh, that's wonderful, brother. That is wonderful. And what we'll do is, once we know what your schedule is going to be looking like, you and Brother Malcolm, for the East Coast, we'll schedule one of the hearings around that time so that you can literally participate in the hearing. Because we want to get you on some of the campuses in the area. But, of course, you know, we want to have you in the community, in the hood, too, to do some of the things we need to do there.
Now, let me say something else too, that Malcolm's presence in Chicago, you know, and not, you know, other places too, is something I've noticed already, that, you know, he's, you know, in his tour in general has inspired. Mm-hmm. In our communities, not just the Revolutionary Forces, just in our day to day situations, you know, I said to one other day, like, they won't let black folks have the opportunity to write to talk about nothing. I mean, whether it be even the forces who are not even revolutionaries, there's always an attempt by other forces to come by and tell our story or rewrite our history.
That's what I was saying earlier.
Mm-hmm. Whether it comes to blues, disco, rock and roll, hip-hop, the street organizations, I say, man, black folks can't have nothing. I'm talking about nothing. And I was talking to some guys, you know, Chicago is phenomenal. You know, saying the whole question about the history of the street organizations. So with organizations, period, but in particular, like when you went to street organizations, what a lot of people refer to as the gangs. You know, our position is that the worst gang in Chicago really is the Chicago Police Department. So we kind of on the words that we use, but a lot of the various descendants or of the, a lot of this, the leadership of the street organizations. They've been up in the ante about saying, wait a minute, we've been having these different TV shows, American Gangster, you know, and the representatives from white, the ruling class come back and tell our stories, and they go get, what they do is they go pick out some of these other people who wasn't even connected to these street guys, you know what I'm saying, to rewrite these stories. So it's even up in the ante in the streets, you know what I'm saying, for guys in the street organizations to start speaking for themselves. We intend for this legacy to up the ante. Even with the question of music, you know what I'm saying? Because if we're not careful, your grandchildren or great-grandchildren, they're going to be arguing with you later on down the road telling you that Eminem was going to create a hip-hop. You know what I mean? I mean, if it sounds crazy to you, look at the fact that they tell us that Elvis Presley was the king of rock and roll. You know, so just pushing Chuck Berry and all them cats to the side. So legacies, I mean, not just in the definition of revolutionary force, but just the whole history of how, you know, how things work, you know what I'm saying, and who did what. It is extremely important that we fight to make us and keep things in context.
That's right, no doubt. And that's really what I was also saying earlier, Chairman Fred, about how important it is, because we know for the past 400 years that his story was not our story, for real, and that was the intent. You know, and so today we have to make certain that we take on the responsibility to assure that the history and our legacies are, in fact, continued. You know, I dare say that having bear witness to how some of these people will try to not only hijack what you do, but the way that they even pay our people to do that, you see, you know, deliberately, intentionally, to do that kind of thing, to help to rewrite history or what have you. And what I've now learned to do in taking a position is I'm no longer on the defense in that kind of matter anymore. I'm not on the defense, you see. So with that said, I've had to put certain things in motion on different levels to kind of help neutralize, you know, the various misinformation pieces and you know, other kind of diversions that have occurred. For example, in 2010, 20 Million March was 1997. In 2007, we did the 10-year anniversary of the Million March, and in city council, they were giving an award or a proclamation to the Million March, and I wasn't even invited. So myself and another sister went up in there, and it just so happened once I walked in, they decided to invite me to participate in the activities. Well, at that point, I already knew what I was going to do. Number one, I don't know if you, Brother Malcolm, you, Chairman Fred, have seen a movie called V for Vendetta. You ever hear of it?
Yeah.
It was one of my favorite movies, okay? It just so happened that I'm a collector of interesting art pieces. So I have a mask of the Master to Do Ward and V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
I have one of them hanging on my wall, right? Just, you know, it's a little side joke. So what happened the day that I walked into the city council while they were up there telling on them lies, I walked in there with my mask, not on, but it just happened to be on my shoulder bag. So I walked into the city council chambers with a V for Vendetta mask hanging from my shoulder bag. So that was point A. I never said a word. That was point A. So once they literally invited me to participate in their little masquerade, I then pulled from my bag a cease and desist order. You see? Because I know that their sessions are taped every week because it's a city thing. So I issued the cease and desist order on the frauds that were attempting to create an illusion of something that I knew was a lie or what they were talking about. So I'm just saying how we now have got to create ways of how we're going to make certain that we stop these people. Because we already know, we've seen it so many times. We already know what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. And so we've now got to put certain operations into the motion where we just say, no, that's not happening like that, and let me show you how it ain't going to happen, and just, boom, there it is. You know, same thing again, a historian here in Philadelphia, a well-known scholar of African history, did an encyclopedia on African black history in America. He put misinformation in it, you say.
Yeah.
Never came to ask me nothing. Just put some and this was somebody black. So for the two of you to do what you're doing, again, I applaud you. I definitely embrace you, support you in any way possible, because it is so important. You know, I have to protect what is rightfully my children's legacy.
Okay.
And I know that you all feel the same about children that you are to have. And so with that said, certainly, you know, those who have come before you want their legacy intact or, you know, as best as possible. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
And no doubt about it. Let me make one point. And also, I would definitely apologize to the listeners. I have to depart and shortly. I think Brother Malcolm also, I won't be speaking for him, but we have to do another phone conference in a minute. We're trying to work on redressing. I don't know if I told you about the mural that we had got in Chicago with Chairman Fritz. We have a phone conference set up in a minute to redress this mural in a few minutes. But before I depart, let me say this to you. Definitely say the revolutionary appreciation for you all the time. Give us the opportunity to talk to the listeners. And I want to say this too, because a lot of times people, we struggle not to sum up things politically. And I just want to say this. I know some people might say, well, man, this is, they might say, well, Fred Hampton's son and Malcolm X's grandson, this is really nice. And, you know, they're doing something for their grandfather and father. And I cannot stress enough, not only, this is not a, and I say this in all objectivity. The whole point, the importance, and I'm learning more and more, you know, so I deal with this. I talk about, and a lot of stuff that people tell me in my life, it really didn't hit me. Like, I'm maybe looking from a third-person view or outside, even talking to young Malcolm, the symbolism, like, I, you know, did I talk to, you know, because these are legacies that not on, like, when I tell people, I say, why y'all say Chairman Fred as opposed to, you know, my daddy? I said, him being Chairman Fred does not negate him being my father, him being a cool and Jerry husband. But, you know what I'm saying, the symbolism, you know, and what he represented, the chairman of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, Malcolm X, El Hajj, Malik El Shabazz, these forces, these were symbolism for our people. We had very, that's why we so stringent, so tight about structuring the definitions of what Marcus Garvey gave us. You know what I'm saying? You got very few symbolisms that people can identify with. So that's black people. That's signs of resistance. You follow what I'm saying? And it's always an attempt to water these legacies down, or what are the significance of what they mean. And I remember when NBC was talking about doing a show on Ronald Reagan, Ronald Wilson Reagan, and his family liked the way it was going to be portrayed. And they shut it down because they understood that Ronald Wilson Reagan is a modern-day symbolism of U.S. capitalism. You know, he's phenomenal. You follow what I'm saying? And I got some serious disdain for this movie Hudson just did about, you know, playing Winnie Mandela in this movie, against Winnie Mandela's wishes. You know what I'm saying? It's a movie that they're coming out. And they went and got Jennifer Hudson to play this role. And I can imagine, I can only imagine, you know what I'm saying, the slander or the twisting of history that's going to go down with it. You follow what I'm saying? And a lot of people say, well, as long as the story is being told, no. Again, they can just change one word around with it and can change the whole concept of it. The CIA was documented to go to the author of Animal Farm to his wife after he had died. They said, we're just going to change the ending of it. That's all. No big deal. We're just going to change the ending of it. And it changed the whole concept of, you know what I'm saying, of Animal Farm. So, again, I know a lot of people will look at this subjectively and say, well, that's, you know, this is his son and the grandson. No, this is a political maneuver. The legacy tour is a strategic strike. It's a strategic strike. You know what I'm saying? It's a strike against the system that literally assassinated these forces. Because we know the same United States government, the same force that assassinated Chairman Fred, that assassinated Dr. King, that assassinated Lil Bobby Hutton, that assassinated El Haj Malik El Shabazz, that assassinated so many of our freedom fighters in one way or another, still lives today. That same system that shoots up the tombstone of Chairman Fred when he's buried at. That same system that comes through and try to co-opt the legacy of El Haj Malik El Shabazz. That same system that will fund. There were foreign forces who come out, you know, said, well, whatever reasons, well, opportunist reasons, whatever, to co-opt these legacies. It's still alive. And we want to send a message to their system and send a message to, you know, saying to adversaries and allies alike that we would never forget and we would never forgive. You know what I'm saying? And we would attempt, you know what I'm saying, to have legacy, memories like Kenyan elephants. And we say, we understand there were some differences. And there will be differences amongst the people. We see the Black Panther Party said differences amongst the people are reconcilable. However, differences between the people and the state are irreconcilable. And we treason don't care no probation, and attacks against these legacies, attacks against these representatives don't care no probation. And you know what I'm saying? And we take Tupac. Tupac say I take this war thing deeply. POCC after that, we take our warriors even deeper. You know what I'm saying? We have very few forces and very few symbolisms of resistance. You can show people and say, I know what that is. A lot of people don't, they can't break down terms like socialism and capitalism. And Chairman Fred talk about the sisters in front of the free breakfast program. The pigs run up on them and say, are you for capitalism? So say, no, Chairman Fred said capitalism ain't no cool thing. And then the pigs say, what about socialism? So say, well, I'm really not hip to those different terms. And the pigs say, what about this free breakfast program? And since they did, this was feeding my kids. If you try to mess with it, we'll blow your brains out. Because they understood it was their thing. The divide of the masses, they can't repeat to you all the particular speeches of El Haj Malik El Shabazz. But, man, when that's the symbolism of Malcolm, just seeing it. It instills a pride of self-defense, of self-determination. Say, man, we can. He's the one who didn't bite his tongue, who spoke for us, who can go to Oxford University in the Monday morning and Tuesday night be on the streets of Harlem, New York, breaking it down to the masses of the people. And the people, and they need this. They need it. The tourists in Chicago, you should get the brothers on the streets and the street organizations, the sisters who out there demoralized, who had not been to any colleges or Yale universities, who had been to the school that Malcolm said he learned American history through its ghettos and its penitentiaries. When I told him who this was with me, you should have seen the light come back into these brothers and sisters. You know, so he said, man, we can't believe this. Chairman Fred and Malcolm, you know what I'm saying, they understood the significance of this. So, you know, and they understand. They are willing to embrace it, protect it, and respect it. You know what I'm saying? That's what we see, and that's our motto with these legacies. And I just want to give us some contact information, too. You to get in contact with us for the Legacy Tour, phone number 773 256 9451, mm-hmm. area code 773-256-9451. They can email Akua and Jerry, AKUANJERI, at AOL.com, and keep updated on the tour. It's through the Block Report Radio, .com, SFAU.com, and different media avenues. And I don't know if Malcolm got some more contacts you want to put out there for us, you know, some email accounts or what have you. We want the word to get out to the world that we hear. You know what I'm saying? We say, man, Chairman Fred said you can kill a revolutionary, but you can't kill a revolution. The beat goes on. And again, before you leave out, because I want to say revolutionary love and respect. And then to my comrade, Malcolm, is always on the tag team with you. We got to do this phone conference on this other, in about a few minutes. I just got a call on another line. We got to do this phone conference about the updates from the mural. So, again, we're going to tag.
I think we lost Brother Malcolm already, and I know you got to go to another call, but what I want to do is, of course, get you back, get you back, and we're going to continue this dialogue, Chairman Fred. So I want to thank you again. I think Brother Malcolm already clicked off, or okay. Either we got disconnected, but we're going to continue this dialogue again very soon, if not this Saturday, definitely in the very near future, and move onward.
Right on. Good thing.
All right.
All
right.
We appreciate
it. Thank you. All right, family. We are going to move forward. That, of course, was Chairman Fred Hampton. And we're out for the evening. We had a lot that we covered tonight. We want to thank Brother Malcolm for coming on, and we're going to try to get him back on this Saturday. All right. Thank you. Peace out.